Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 6. Today I am joined by Danny Ning, Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, and I am, of course, Matt Winter. We've got an awesome set of topics today. We're going to talk about the strife in Venezuela and medical marijuana. Oh, yeah. But before we get on to that, let's have a little open, candid conversation. What's happening today, my friends?
How's it going?
Hey.
Best day of my life, man.
Anything exciting on the Liberty front this week?
Well, Eric, you went to a convention, so the BPOU, I believe, last weekend. So, you know, maybe you want to discuss a little bit on that.
Sure, yeah. So our Senate district had their BPOU convention on Saturday at Grace Church in Eden Prairie. So I'm in SD48 now, which consists of all of Eden Prairie and the southern half of Minnetonka. We're aiming to go from 8:30 to 12:30, and basically the business that we're looking to cover, to listen to some candidates for U.S. Senate, gubernatorial candidates, and House endorse 48A and 48B House candidates, and then adopt some resolutions that have come out of the precinct level. Everything kind of flowed pretty well. Had some governors or governor candidates speak. Had some senator candidates speak. Endorsed Kirk Stensrud, who barely lost in the 2012 election. He won in 2010, but he barely won then. Really, where I live is it's pretty split between Republican and Democratic sides, and actually it's probably a little bit more liberal than conservative. Actually, there's a lot of the demographic is really fiscally conservative, socially liberal, really in my area. Okay. So it kind of swings both way. Either way is at play in a House election in the district. Kirk won in 2010 by under 200 votes. He lost in 2012 by under 200 votes. So Dave Osmick, who's the SD33 state senator, was there pushing hard for Kirk. And David Hahn, who's SD48 and the Senate minority leader, was also, he was also pushing pretty hard. So he was unanimously endorsed. When it came to 48B, Jennifer Loon, she supported voting against 1 of 4 House representatives who voted against the Republican House representatives who voted against the traditional marriage amendment. She was up for an endorsement. She's also very she's a strong advocate. She's introduced some legislation to get rid of the Sunday liquor law. So she's done a pretty good job of fighting against the liquor lobby, which wants to keep that law in effect. Was challenged at the last minute by a local activist, her name's Sheila Keen. And it was a surprise. It went through five ballots and ended in a vote to not endorse. Keen was high. By the time the vote to not endorse concluded, she had 59% of the 48B delegation supporting her. And she did a stealth underground campaign to pull social conservatives who otherwise wouldn't have been participating in the convention out to the convention to vote specifically for her because of Jennifer Loon's stance on gay marriage. She kind of, a motion was brought up to not endorse. She probably could have won on the sixth ballot. you know, basically said she's going to have to, after the motion was approved, she's like, I'll see if I'm going to run. I don't know if I am going to or I'm not going to. Jennifer Loon said she's going to, and in my mind, she will win a primary. She'll win an election. But there is a lot of drama, and I think I alluded to the Minnesota Family Council when we were talking before the show. They handed out almost the exact same flyer that they handed out at the Wright County BPO convention where they attacked David Fitzsimmons. So her support of or opposition to the traditional marriage amendment and the fact that she's got some funding from out of the district because she's a pretty good fundraiser. So that was pretty much the convention. I was disappointed to see that there were only 12 Liberty people there out of 157, and we only got three elected as state and CD3 delegates, so 3 out of 40. So, you know, there is quite a bit of apathy, I think, amongst the Liberty people in the SD48, and I think Kirk, you and Danny saw the same type of result in Carver County. So it's kind of disappointing. I met some good Liberty people I hadn't met before, but it was just real low turnout. So that's kind of the convention in a nutshell.
Eric, can you go back to that Mrs. Loon and the challenger?
Yeah, sure.
Now, who was you referenced the social conservatives and whatnot against the gay marriage stuff. Who was on what side? And can you refresh that? Were they both? Was she being challenged because she supported gay marriage, or was she against it?
No. So Jennifer Loon, who is an incumbent, I think she's a five or six term incumbent. Voted against the traditional marriage amendments. So they came out swinging against her. What's that?
So they came out swinging against her.
Yeah, they
just like in Wright County against Fitzgibbons.
Yep, they didn't announce that anyone was going to oppose her until the morning of the convention, and they've been working. And they said that they'd only or Sheila Keene, the individual who ended up with 59% of the vote, basically, you know, flooded, you know, the convention with social conservatives on the 48B side, said that she'd only decided the night before. But I'd heard from individuals at the convention that they'd received calls 2-4 weeks ago from her stating that, you know, that this was going to happen. So, you know, it appears, I don't know, in connecting the dots, it appears that the Minnesota Family Council has some, you know, some type of strategy to really put the coals to people who voted against the traditional marriage amendment.
Well, I would love to find out where the funding's coming from this group. That, I mean, if I was the Democrats, I'd be putting money in left and right to these people.
Yep. Exactly, yeah.
It says far different than the Liberty group coming in and taking over the conventions. This is social conservatism run amok, in my opinion. And well,
why would the Democrats want that? I mean, they're anti-gay rights. Why would they support that?
Well,
what do you mean,
I think what Kirk's getting at it's to segment or stratify the conservative side, which makes it easier. Where you have districts that are not, you know, in Wright County, that's really that's conservative, but you can maybe stratify and have some infighting, which allows for a Democratic, you know, to take that district. In 48B, it could go either way. It's conservative, but if you have enough infighting, it could put that seat in play for the Democratic side. I think that's what Kirk's trying to say.
Yeah, people won't go out and vote for Loon. It'd swing it the other way pretty easily.
Yeah, that was a thought that I had. I think it's a kind of an outlier, but it's a possibility.
Well, it's like the gas companies funding nuclear energy opposition. I mean, it's something totally different than outside them, and they fund the process of, you know, why would they do that? Well, just to create havoc.
Yep. So,
yeah, it'd be interesting to see how many other areas, congressional districts, they did this in too, but we've only heard of Wright County and then SD 48 here. But
there's only four Republicans who voted against it, and they've targeted two heavily.
All four.
One's not running, and I think there's one yet to hit the endorsing convention for their district.
Well, yeah, and my point is, I think this is the dividing line in the Republican Party, which really creates conflict. And what better way than the Democrats funding this kind of organization to come in and pump money and just run amok of the system? And it's pretty amazing how far liberty is outside the Republican mantra that, you know, they can't see the light through the fog here, that the fog is being generated, and it's pretty amazing. But this is nothing like shoving Obamacare down our throats, which is the biggest Republican deal out there, and to shove down the gay marriage amendment down everyone else's throats when it's a mute issue. I mean, it's already done and over. It's not going to change, especially in Minnesota after it's there. That it makes no sense.
Yeah, it's almost like a wedge issue. In my mind, it's one of those issues that, give it time, it's going to be universally accepted. But it fires up a kind of an extreme base, which allows individuals or politicians to maybe get elected or further whatever agenda they have. But there are much more larger fish to fry than talking about a marriage amendment.
My mind is, why is this being rehashed all over again?
It doesn't need to be.
This is a
conversation that ended many years ago.
It should never even been in the forefront 2 years ago.
So I honestly believe that had that not happened, you and I would be sitting in office right now.
Yeah, it's and to me, if you're trying to be, if I was in the Democrat Party trying to weaken the Republican Party at any point, this would be the best way to go about it. And it makes no sense. And people should have their eyes wide open about this, that trying to legislate the preservation of marriage, it makes no sense when the marriage is through the license of the state. It's no longer just through a religion or whatnot. It's through the state. You can't write laws to be picky like that. Then it creates a win or lose. It's a win for the Democrats. Even if the Republicans won on this issue, if it was really a Republican ideal, it would be a losing battle in the long run anyways. This would usher in a decade of Democrat power. And then for the issue to lose in the Republican Party and throughout the state, and then to be rehashed again, makes no sense at all. And these people need to be chastised and criticized at every point that they are trying to pull this stuff. And I can't believe I haven't heard more about this in talk radio or from other people just in the street, really. I mean, this is only happening in the conventions where it's creating division.
It's really, it's inside baseball used to get certain candidates elected or pushed out before the primary process.
I just can't see any Republican running on this again. Oh, yeah, I won the endorsement because I oppose gay marriage. And then they're going to run on that. They're going to get their ass creamed again.
Oh, they will. Well, in moderate districts, if you're in, it really depends. But for the most part, they will. You know, for a district, if you're talking about Eden Prairie, there's no chance a Republican candidate like that can win. Or in my area, but if you get further out in Carver County, out west, you know, kind of in Leidiger's area,
they'll just win because it's the R by the name. It won't be that issue,
right?
In my opinion, and then it'd be glossed over, like, oh, this is the reason why they won, because they oppose gay marriage. It'd be all over the newspaper and all over the media. It'd be embarrassing. But
fair enough. Yeah.
I mean, I feel the Republican Party should promote the law of contracts and the adultery out there inside the Republican Party, and then they ignore that, but then they got to run on this so-called the destruction of marriage through the same-sex marriage. Makes no sense at all.
There are people who really believe it's wrong, and those people, when you have people who are passionate about an issue, you can turn those people out at, you know, conventions that are, you know, lightly attended anyway, and it could allow you to kind of, you know, flip the picture. But when you go into a primary process, which is even, you know, it's still a pretty small segment that participates, it's pretty difficult for them to be successful, I think.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's why that lady didn't. What was her name again?
Sheila Keane.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure that's why she didn't want to step forth at all until the last minute, and she definitely had the pressure put on her, and so it ended up being a no endorsement, correct?
Right.
And yeah, I doubt she ends up running in the primary. The numbers would not be there.
Well, that and Jennifer Loon has a lot of money in her treasury, so and a lot of support.
Yeah, and I remember 2 years ago or a year and a half ago seeing Loon and Kirk all over the place. I didn't know much about them. I didn't live in the area, but yeah, they definitely have name recognition. I recognize, well, me being Kirk as well, I recognize that, but the Loon I recognize as well.
You guys talk about any other issues besides same-sex marriage?
Like, yeah, that marijuana.
Marijuana
thing coming to the resolution.
Well, the thing about it is we spent so much time on that. I mean, wanted to be done by 12:30. We spent like 3.5 hours, and we also, the idea was to give delegate candidates 20 seconds each to speak, and we had 97 of them. So once we got through, well, actually we started doing the delegate voting by delegates just basically stood up after the chair said their name, waved, sat down, and you know, people voted. And so after we got through the delegate voting and then got through the contested 48B endorsement, we really had no time. So basically the rules committee's like, vote to approve all resolutions, and didn't touch on any of them. So some of the resolutions were, you know, making sure the Second Amendment was mentioned within the state constitution. Making sure that we retain our caucus system rather than going to a national popular vote, having the national party and choose delegates. That was another resolution, and there are a few more minor resolutions that came from one or two precincts that were approved. But the only way I knew about that was because the Resolutions Committee sent an email out after the convention stating what resolutions had been approved. They weren't actually touched on at all because we just didn't have time.
Well, I thought in the last podcast that you said there wasn't going to be the speeches. So did that change, or was that?
It did change. Yeah.
So that's a new addition this year?
Well, they changed it and then they didn't do it. And there were a couple of individuals that were upset by that and actually spoke to it. Basically, the head of the nomination committee said, well, based on the fact that we only have this facility until 2:30 and we're at 2 o'clock, we really don't have the time to allow everyone to speak. So, there were multiple, I think there were 4 slates
So how last podcast we talked about it. So the slates, are they put on the walls? Are they handed out? Are the slates aligned on certain politicians, or how was the slates aligned?
Yeah, there is a slate that was provided by the BPOU search committee. So of 30 delegates for 40 spots. And then there was a slate that was provided by the Jeff Johnson campaign for governor. And then there was a slate that was provided by the Marty Seifert campaign. And then another slate that was sent via email.
Are you allowed to hand out slates at that convention too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
What do you guys think about Venezuela?
Or should we move into – I have a good – should we start with medical marijuana first? Because I have a good – we're talking about the Minnesota Family Council, and I have a fantastic clip.
If we go too long today, let's skip Venezuela. But
– yeah.
Get high.
How long we go? If you're cool with that.
I have a clip. This is pretty new, actually, from the 4th, where a representative of the Minnesota Family Council is presenting her side of the argument, or their side of the argument, to the Minnesota Health Services Committee.
These are the douchebags.
These are the people that they kind of have been sabotaging endorsement conventions. So,
yeah, what's their name again one more time?
The Minnesota Family Council.
Oh,
proper families, they can't be ruined by marijuana.
Yeah, so I'll fire off this clip and we can discuss after. Yeah, let's hit medical marijuana and, you know, maybe we can do Venezuela next week if we run out of time here.
Sounds good.
My name
is Autumn Leva, and I am here representing Minnesota Family Council this evening. I think it's first instructive to look to Colorado, who first began using medical marijuana in 2001. And the medical marijuana registration program indicates that from 2001 to 2013, 94% of the reporting conditions for use of medical marijuana were for severe pain, not cancer, glaucoma, or AIDS. Other authorized conditions weren't even close, with muscle spasms coming in at a distant second place at 13%. So I think it's instructive to point out that if those statistics carry over to Minnesota, if this bill were to become law, Minnesota legislators would be authorizing for users overwhelmingly claiming severe pain the use of a highly addictive and unproven drug. And at the very
least, this
should cause pause for some serious concern. And that's why I'm here tonight, to point out 5 main concerns that we have with this bill. I will be succinct.
The first Fuck!
Is that marijuana is, as a gentle reminder, still illegal under federal law. Secondly, this bill is being sold as a help for the very sick and terminally ill patients. But many of the medical communities this bill is said to help don't even support the use of medical marijuana, to which just a few, American Cancer Society, Multiple Sclerosis Society, And the Tourette Syndrome Association Medical Advisory Board finds that studies are inconclusive to show positive effects of medical marijuana on Tourette's and emphasizes the high degree of risks associated with the drug and the long-term effects.
No, do you represent
Kirk, you're out of luck.
Those organizations?
No, ma'am. This is research found right on their website.
Giving us a survey of websites.
Correct.
Okay.
And their position on the issue, yes. And finally,
oh,
the
my
American
God.
Medical Association and American Academy of Pediatrics. The third point is this is still a highly addictive, mind-altering drug that the government has classified as having, quote, no medicinal uses and high.
Oh, stop it!
The list of risks associated with marijuana, according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, is quite long, including mental health problems, lung disease, heart attack, harming brain development, and the list goes on. In fact, the NIDA states clinical evidence has not shown that the therapeutic benefits of marijuana outweigh its significant health risks. Point number four, this authorization of medical marijuana makes a mockery of the drug approval and use process. So when we're prescribed an FDA-approved strong drug by a doctor, I think all of us have been there at some point, the container specifies the use of the drug, exactly how many to take and when, restrictions on refills, side effects, interaction with other drugs, how long to take it, warnings, etc. There's no warnings for the aforementioned serious health risks associated with marijuana. On a marijuana plant. No warnings on a joint that it contains four times the amount of carbon monoxide. And
no warnings.
And a patient's 12,
there are on mine.
12 marijuana plants don't mention that marijuana is highly addictive. In fact, 4.5 million addicted in the U.S. today. And that it's
4.5
steadily since the 80s. And that the FDA has approved THC as a medication, but it has not approved the marijuana plant because insufficient clinical trials to show that its benefits outweigh the risks. And to be considered a legitimate medicine, a substance must have well-defined and measurable ingredients that are consistent from one unit, such as a pill, to the next. And this consistency allows doctors to determine the dose and frequency. Obviously, a marijuana plant is different from that. And again, the significant health risks prevent it from being FDA authorized. And finally,
I'd like to know what plant she eats. They're all consistent.
Message to our youth. According to the NIDA, quote, rising marijuana use reflects changing perceptions and attitudes. Historically, as perception of risks
sounds
goes
like somebody
down, use goes up and vice versa.
Window open.
Young people are showing less disapproval of marijuana use and decreased perception that marijuana is dangerous. The growing perception of marijuana as a safe drug may reflect recent public discussions over, quote, medical marijuana and movements to legalize the drug for adult recreational use in some states. They also note that marijuana use by adolescents declined.
Pause it. Sounds like a jet airliner's taking off.
What's going on?
What is that?
Is that you, Danny?
I'm getting high.
It stopped.
Where did that come from?
I have no idea. All right, continue the clip.
Okay, here we go.
And daily use have increased since that time. So, you know, for marijuana for young people, which we know comes with significant risks, including a higher increased level of school dropout, this is a serious concern and a serious cause for concern in sending a message to our youth. So in conclusion, for a highly addictive drug with well-documented health risks, as well as societal risks, including increases in crime, likelihood of school dropout and or career failure, poorer mental and physical health, and in relationship and bonding issues, and with leading associations representing those who suffer from the, quote, debilitating medical listed in the bill.
Oh, my God.
Risks of marijuana use are outweighing any potential, though as of yet clinically unproven benefits. This committee ought to have serious pause before putting at risk the entire state, especially our youth, for a dangerous drug that the overwhelming majority of people would likely use for serious pain. So we at Minnesota Family Council urge the Health and Human Services Committee, a committee designed to be a legislative watchdog creating policies to benefit the health and well-being of the individuals and families in our state, to vote against
the
committee. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mrs. Kleba. And I just want to invite you, if you're worried about highly addictive drugs with well-documented health risks, to stick around and hear our next bill and the lengths that we have to go to deal with the drugs that are available, which are being used to treat chronic, serious pain.
Yes.
I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh my God. There are levels of pissed off that I am right now listening to this woman rat on. I cannot believe this. The research that she's quoting, did she cite anything? Yeah, did she cite anything?
Websites. That's it.
Oh, the websites. Yes, the websites. Are you guys aware? All right, I just have to throw this out there because if people aren't aware of this, this is going to blow their damn mind. In 1930, when marijuana was originally made illegal, it was made illegal based on the testimony of a man who said after two puffs on a marijuana cigarette, he was turned into a bat. Bat. the nocturnal animal that eats insects. His quote was, that was the justification used by Congress to make it illegal. So a man who not said that he turned into a bat.
They came out with movies propagandizing against it too. But let me just read real quick from their website. Minnesota Family Institute Policy on Political Activities. As a tax-exempt organization under Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, Minnesota Family Institute cannot intervene in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. That's pretty funny. And they played this at the convention?
No, they didn't play this at the convention. This was one of their representatives presenting to the Minnesota House Health Service Committee, which was hearing a bill. Actually, passed through. I believe it was 8-3. But before it was passed through, speaking against. So these are two separate issues. We had the flyer, the identical flyers that were produced and dispersed by the Minnesota Family Council at the Wright County BPO Convention and then the SD48 Convention. So that goes directly against the statement that you just read, Kirk. Because it appears that they did influence a couple of endorsement elections.
Yes. That just boggles my mind. And why would they not even go after them? Because obviously they want these people to do this stuff.
To do what stuff?
Whatever they're doing right now. It's freaking ridiculous. I can't believe people buy into this stuff.
So there's all right. Speaking specifically to the medical marijuana side of it, I'm not even talking about the fact that it should just be legalized in general. Because, quite frankly, how many times have you heard somebody ever say, "I'm gonna go home, get high, and then beat my kids"? You know, that kind of shit doesn't happen. you're talking about a situation where somebody's gonna go home and chill out, and you know, at most, want to stare at the wall. I mean, in an unproductive manner. Otherwise, you know. I know more than a handful of multimillionaires who are habitual marijuana smokers. So the whole like job recidivism, like they're gonna like sit there and lose these jobs. No, whatever. That's all bullshit. But furthermore, the research that's been done in recent years that shows that THC, the actual active ingredient in marijuana, is an inhibitor of tumor growth is absolutely astronomical. That it's so remarkable. You're literally talking about a plant that people are smoking and ingesting in other manners. A lot of the times it's by oil. And the reason they do that is because you cannot ingest the quantity that's necessary of the THC in order to inhibit the growth. But they have found quite literally that the THC itself inhibits tumor growth. There are children who have their lives coming back to them because they're being treated using THC instead of traditional radiation treatment.
the traditional radiation treatment that would have the exact same result. These kids are coming back to the point where they're able to behave as children again. They can play. They can go out. They have their appetites back. They don't lose their hair. It's the exact same type of results that they're seeing. It's unbelievable that these types of results. I actually have I have at least 30 links that I can provide that are two different studies that talk about the benefits of medical marijuana and what marijuana can do in order to inhibit the growth of cancer. And these studies are demonstrable by reputable laboratories. It's not a bunch of hippies banging bongos around a bonfire. It's a real scientific study. These are truly showing the results of the results of using marijuana to try to help people.
It's all propaganda.
I'll pull out my tinfoil hat and throw out the idea that marijuana is a direct threat against major pharmaceuticals.
I'd agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. Oh yeah, no, for sure, my friend. There's no way. There's no other way that this will be getting refuted as much as it is.
And there is a lot of money.
It's against what the law has been written, how it is today. People ignore that law, and for them to all of a sudden say it's legal undermines the whole process. And then you have the pharmaceutical lobbies, and
which is one of the strongest lobbies.
Apparently, all the religious lobbies funding this as well against. And
the religious,
not to mention,
I think that's lesser, but
the drug cartels in Mexico if this was made illegal, it would drive them out of business.
Oh, absolutely. So you have an entire
highly moneyed interest to keep marijuana
illegal. Billions that are made on the illegal drug trade. And then they're going to see that all of a sudden the mentality of the people in a democratic society are going to vote to legalize it. They're going to do whatever they can to keep it illegal, especially when they're tied into the government. And that's why I saw this headline the other day. Oh, marijuana-laced lollipops or something like that were seized at the border that were labeled for kids. It's like if I was leading a cartel, I would sit up. All right, how are we going to defeat this uprising to legalize weed? Paul, let's market the
lollipop,
and it will freak out the parents to make that we cannot legalize it because businesses are going to start marketing to kids when that is the farthest thing from the truth as possible.
Yeah, I mean. There are wealthy interests that don't want to see marijuana legalized. So you look at it from, the criminal side, the prescription drug industry side, the extreme right-wing religious side that are fighting against something that essentially is far less harmful than smoking a cigarette or drinking a drink.
Yeah, it just blows my mind that this just shows once again how they downgrade Ron Paul. And the same kind of tactics are coming against this legalization of marijuana. And it's ridiculous. When most Republicans all point to the founding fathers consistently.
The
majority
of
the founding fathers grew hemp and smoked marijuana, and that should be shoved in their face every time. Yet they still came up with the freaking Constitution.
Well, in my opinion, we're at an impasse here. There's a lot of people who don't think that there's anything wrong with smoking weed.
Well, most people now don't. In my mind, it's an inevitability that it will be completely decriminalized within the next 10 years in almost every state. It's a direct threat against quite a few highly moneyed interests, and they're going to battle tooth and nail. You know, they're going to hit it hard politically to maintain the fact that it's illegal. Maybe I'm naive, but the way that I see it is they're fighting really a losing battle.
Well, I see it as if the Republican Party would get out front in a liberty mantra saying, hey, we believe in liberty. We believe if you want to smoke weed in your house, that's fine. Just don't harm anyone else.
Most people smoke weed.
Stay independent. You don't have to. I mean, you're not harming anyone else. Just keep it at that. Be over 18. You know, you can create any regulation you want for the age 18, 21, whatever
how about
it
not?
Matters.
How about not?
Well, you're not going to win that when alcohol is already 21 years old and tobacco is 18. But
yeah,
I mean, you could do.
Well, that's another topic. I mean, you can be in the military when you're 18 and you can go die from the country, but you can't drink alcohol. But
you can't smoke a joint.
Yeah. But it's a losing battle. And what if the Republican Party would get in front of it? It would be the biggest groundswell ever for the Republican Party. And obviously they're not interested in that. I think they're interested in creating a two-party division. And this topic transcends both because they're both lobbied by the pharmaceutical companies and other interests, and they get all the money from them, and they will not go against that to limit that funding that they get to. I mean,
business. We've been saying this for a while now, so we've been repeating the same statement. Tell me this. Do you guys think that the groundswell of support at the grassroots level is enough to kind of overcome this pharmaceutical lobbying? I mean, we've seen it happen in Colorado and in Washington. Do you think it's possible that could continue to swell up and become something in Minnesota?
Well, there is another lobby or block that would like to keep marijuana illegal, and that's the public safety lobby. So,
well, yes, because it stays in your system for 2 to 4 weeks, so
no,
you
that's
can't really...
not what I'm referencing. That's not really what I'm referencing.
All right.
What is this, Eric?
Well, local police departments, state safety, they get funding, federal funding, based on how successful they are in arresting offenders who are consuming, you know, various levels of drugs. So I believe marijuana now is a priority one level drug. There are incentives for police organizations to arrest individuals, and they hit certain quota numbers, and they get money or funding from the federal government based on how successful they are at quote unquote eradicating the problem. These organizations are incentivized to arrest people who smoke marijuana. And if you legalize
while
it, they lose a primary funding source. And organization like that is going to naturally want to defend their source of funding, right?
You've got to be kidding me, dude.
Yes, we're all slaves. Look at Fast and Furious. Our government's out there pressuring our local police departments to bust people on marijuana, while on the offhand, they're funneling weapons into the cartel's hands to have them commit violence, to come and back and use that against us again violate the Second Amendment. It's a closed loop system that they win on either end. It's total malarkey. It's total bullshit.
But the interesting thing is, in my mind, I could be wrong, all these interests are eventually going to be defeated.
And I agree. I totally agree.
And they're scrambling to protect their interests, but in the last 10 years especially, public opinion has shifted substantially in support of legalization. So you have these various organizations that are looking to protect their turf, but in my mind, it's a futile effort. It's, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen, and they're not going to be able, they may be able to push it off a little while for a couple of years, but, you know, eventually it'll be decriminalized, it'll be legalized, and states are probably going to really like the fact that they can get a lot of tax revenue like Colorado has got. I think in January they recently announced the amount of tax revenue that they derive from marijuana sales, and I think it was around $15 million for the month. So,
which, you know, I have a whole nother opinion on, but
right, it's the taxation level in Colorado for marijuana is around 27%.
It's just insane.
Well, it was the sticker shock. I mean, it costs more. It's cheaper to go still in Colorado is what I was hearing from people, that it's cheaper to still go through the illegal means than it is the legal means because it's so highly taxed. So by them doing that, they keep the illegal system still flowing.
Yep.
Which is
stupid.
Also to their interests, I would argue.
Okay. All right. That's interesting.
That's an interesting comment. That's something I haven't thought of before.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I don't feel like it's that well.
It's kind of conspiratorial.
Because I feel like there's a whole huge groundswell of support, and that's why they legalized it in the first place. Like, you've got a major initiative.
The tax issue, I think the revenue issue is what ultimately allowed it to be approved.
You know, I'm not sure. I guess I'm not sure.
I really don't think that's the reason. There was a person in our caucus that said, hey, yeah, the tax is coming in. But to me, that's such a mute point.
It's a lot of money.
It does. They can make money anywhere they want. They just got to create a new tax.
Sure.
It's they can raise the gas tax and bring in a ton of money, but then it's focused on the roads. But
to me, we're kind of in a situation where you've got a completely innocuous substance that's not going to cause any kind of societal collapse that people are trying to create panic over. And I don't know if it's because they don't understand what it is, or they've been convinced that it is something that it isn't. But it's kind of shocking to me, like, based on the testimony that we just heard, that we were listening to earlier.
That's a very right-wing extreme testimony, but...
But if people believe that, I mean, that's remarkable. That's such an ignorant viewpoint. I mean, I haven't heard something that ignorant in forever.
I think it's a really extreme, small segment of the population that would agree with that.
And I have no doubt that you're correct, but they're getting microphone time, which is even more scary. You know, they're there and they're getting people to listen to them.
Well, I just think we should look back at when Prohibition was enacted, the fear-mongering then. And then really the best – I would love if we were prepared and had a clip of the propaganda video they did against marijuana back in decades upon decades ago.
You're talking about Reefer Madness, right?
Reefer Madness. Yes. I can find it.
It's not a clip. It's an hour long movie. It's got to be a 30 second clip.
That would be priceless. I mean, it goes exactly, give you some examples. Congress about, oh, I turned into a bat. Okay, no, it was used primarily. We got to look back at this.
I have a trailer of Reefer Madness.
The
trailer. Trailer might be okay.
There we go.
One of the things I want to say about it is they've got a scene where somebody they've got the teenagers and they're smoking weed and they get into a car and then they just blatantly run somebody over like with no problem.
That's
with
the same thing they use against alcohol. I mean,
here's the trailer. I'm gonna play the trailer. Let's listen to Reefer Madness.
I think as well.
Here we go.
All right.
These high school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. Innocently, they dance. Innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors. Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell. In this film, you will see the ease with which this vicious plant can be grown in your neighbor's yard, rolled into harmless-looking cigarettes, hidden in an innocent shoe or watch case.
If you want a good smoke, try one of these.
You will meet Bill, who once took pride in his strong will as he takes the first step toward enslavement.
Of course, if you're afraid.
The soul-destroying reefer, they find a moment's pleasure, but at a terrible price. Debauchery, violence, murder, suicide, and the ultimate end of the marijuana addict. Hopeless insanity.
Reckless masturbation.
Now, before it is too late.
No, well, I think the important thing is, what year did that come out?
1930.
It was in the 50s. Oh, it was in the 30s?
When did they outlaw marijuana?
It was around that time.
Anyone know?
I'd have to look up the date. But it was around 1930s.
If you look at the time frame and the Civil Rights Movement, the Civil Rights Movement had to happen because laws and regulations were created just to keep minorities down. I mean, it was changing into a micromanagement culture. And
1936.
So it was the same year as the film? Yes.
Government was run amok. They were preventing liberties all over the place, and they used this marijuana legislation to specifically prosecute minorities. And it has transcended ever since. You can look through even today. It's like 75% are still of the fines.
1937
and prison
became
time happened to minorities than Caucasians. And it's the prevalence in society of marijuana is unbelievable for how illegal it is. And it has people turn a blind eye on it half the time, but then they still fear. It just creates this fear of, oh my God, if someone's on that, then I don't think I can trust them. But if it's someone I know, oh yeah, that's fine. But as long as it's none of those crazy inner city people, you know, who knows? I might get robbed when I go downtown.
They
might be on marijuana.
Marijuana
but
smokers.
It's
so violent.
It's all emotional fear. There's nothing different than the global warming scare. What else can we go down? This whole terrorism scare. It's all impedes on our liberties. And from the get-go, it should be easily proven that it was manipulated and construed to limit people's liberties in an outrageous attempt that was purely propaganda, full of lies and manipulation, and for religious institutions to sit there and buy into that bullshit and follow suit with that lies and manipulations. If you follow the Bible, read the Bible, it's in the fruits of the labor. And nothing is more true than in the devilish handlings of manipulating truth. And this is what entirely marijuana is about.
Damn right.
Regulation about it. And if any of these religious institutions that are consistently fighting marijuana truly look at the means that they fight it with, it's full of manipulation, deceit, lies, that is purely ostracized in the Bible itself. And God would not stand for it. Jesus would not stand for it. He would say, live and let live. And he would argue against getting high. If you go back to the Bible, your body is a temple. You would treat it right and do that. But it is not in the state's business to regulate it as such.
Of course not. Your expectation should be that the state is going to protect your right to operate any way that you want to, as long as you're not affecting the people around you.
That's the libertarian view.
Sorry for getting so heated there. That's stuff.
Yeah, you're a little fired up right there.
I just can't stand people stomping on any individual's liberties. Whether I choose to do so or not has nothing to do with the circumstance. I will argue for any day of the week.
Well, my friends, what are we looking at for time?
We got a couple
Hey,
minutes.
Does anyone know? I've been trying to figure out where the application for Minnesota Family Council's 501c3 organizations form is. I can't recall the website to look in their form and look into their – they usually don't have to disclose their donors, but I was just going to see what they in there. Because the millions of dollars they raised, I do not see coming from
– They haven't raised millions of dollars.
I see
they haven't
– far more big business behind them.
No. Their funding is smaller. I think last year they got about 330,000. So but it doesn't.
330,000 is nothing compared to what they do. I mean, they have.
No,
they've
it
been.
That's.
Well, there's all these websites saying they've been calling for millions upon millions of dollars, trying to raise $4.9 million to fight the gay marriage ban or amendment.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I don't know. I just would urge people to go back and look at the fruits of people's, and how people go about trying to fund finalize their agenda. When they construe the situation, throw in lies and deceit, it does nothing for the cause, and it only prolongs the inevitable that, especially in today's day and age with the internet, and we can get around the mainstream media that fully promoted anti-marijuana legislation back, or legislation forming anti-marijuana that back in the day, that nowadays you can't fight that stuff in the way they used to. And the truth's out there.
That's the truth.
The honesty in the situation is so far removed that people I know, all of us have grown up in this day and age, and we've been around people that use marijuana habitually, and we've dealt with older people that use it habitually. We've come across people that deal in marijuana illegally. And how they talk and how the people that they say smoke marijuana. It's so prevalent. It comes in the highest professions out there through
Kirk,
politicians.
I think we can all agree with this. We all see the professional use of marijuana,
know,
and that's
said.
Well, we already did say that once already tonight, and I don't think they're that ignorant. I think we probably got quite a knowledgeable audience here. We've already said multiple times tonight that we know multiple millionaires who smoke weed on a habitual.
Well, that does nothing to do with multi-millionaires. I'm just talking about any profession.
Right, there's
out
lots
there.
Of professions out there that there's a lot of people who smoke weed. But however, I need to wrap this up tonight. We're at the end of the show. Thank you for joining us. This has been Liberty Southwest Podcast number 6. Thank you.